This is Sophie, and you're listening to the Jew and the Gentile podcast.
I'm Charles Breton.
And I'm Chris Henson. And together we are
a Jew
and a Gentile.
Walk into a bar.
Mitzvah.
Wishing I could change the things that I screwed up. What am I supposed to do? I can't give up. You know I can't give up.
Oh, welcome into episode 68 of the Jew and Gentile Walk into a Bar
Mitzvah,
the podcast. As you heard in our intro, I'm Charles Breton. I'm your Jew.
I'm still Chris. I'm still Gentile.
And as we always do, we like to remind you, first of all, that we're available wherever you can find your podcasts, as well as theologycorner.net. We want to thank our sponsors, Men of the Beard Beard Oil.
Yes.
The finest Christian shaman-produced beard oil.
Well, and we're going to be hooking up and meeting back with Pastor Nar and the rest of the unholy motley crew of, religious zealots, one-and-dones, okay. And... I'm really just struggling to describe.
We're going to be at Wild Goose, is what Chris is trying to say.
Yeah, the other geese.
Yeah,
we'll be podcasting.
And we'll be podcasting. We've got a nice lineup. We're going to be Saturday at 4. We're going to be the warm-up act for Happy Hour.
Which I think, I just figured out why we're before Happy Hour.
Because we have Dana Trent, who's Baptist.
Well, that could be one of them. Otherwise, okay. I think most people's most happiest hour of the week is when they get done with our fucking podcast, and it's the longest time between listening to that one and the next abortion we put out there.
Yeah. That's Yeah. Well, as I just hinted, Dana Trent's going to be joining us, and 1, 2, or 3 of the Twisted Sisters will be joining us.
I hope it's Dee Snider.
There'll be drinking. We'll probably all be drinking some sort of
whiskey,
like virgin cane. Dana will probably be doing a couple of shots of Manischewitz.
Somebody's got to keep it kosher.
Yeah, that's right.
Wait, is Virgil Caine kosher? I never even thought to ask.
Well, it's not produced under rabbinic supervision, so
right,
it's not hechered, but I do not believe there are any ingredients. It's not kosher for Pesach because it's a grain.
Right.
Well, it is kosher for Pesach. It's just kidney oat is a stupid Ashkenazic tradition.
Like, I've seen you sit next... When we met the good folks from Virgil Caine, it was at the Beer Barbecue and Bourbon Festival.
Yeah, and I did spend much time at the Shrine of Swine.
You did?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Virgil Caine, they are one of our sponsors, which is why we are enjoying their ginger-infused bourbon, which is why this is why we do our sponsors first, because we drink while we're recording this, and by the time we finish drinking, we're probably not going to be in a condition to remember who our sponsors are.
Which is why we enjoy that happiest of hours after our podcast.
Yeah.
People hear that like it's ginger infused. And I know for a cigar purist, they're probably going, oh, that sounds like
an abomination
acid or something. But it gives you the flavor that you would want in a good bourbon. And that ginger just kind of softens. There's just no burn. There's not a heavy burn to it. It's an aftertaste you would like and welcome. It's just... Mm-hmm. And that's just straight. And yeah. We put it in all kinds of concoctions, and we have yet to find a bad one.
No.
Other than the empty glass version, because that's just sad all over.
Yeah. Or the empty bottle, or as it's sometimes referred to, the dead soldier.
Right.
Not good.
We're working on retiring at least one bottle of rye.
We're close.
You're close.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to restock before Wild Goose.
Right, well, yeah.
We don't have enough to get us to July, let alone through Wild Goose.
Well, and if we're out of Virgil Caine, we do have other alcohol available.
We do.
The Four Saints Brewery.
Which is another one of our sponsors. Wow. That, did you see how he did that? That was so smooth. Yeah, I recently stocked up with some good... I found actually an... Our other sponsor, the Pipe and Pint.
They're opening another location closer to me.
In Winston, but they managed to hide a couple of bottles of the St. Nicholas Christian Christmas Ale.
It's still
Christian also, but it's their Christmas Ale from Four Saints. So I snagged a bottle of that this week.
Did I have that one? That night was kind of a blurry memory. Yeah.
Which is why you know you had some of it.
Right. Oh, the Impending Grace.
Yeah.
Oh, that's still, I talk about that probably every podcast since Beer and Hymns. Which, how did that go? Did you do the Beer and Hymns?
We did Beer and Hymns. It was a really good time.
First Sunday of the month?
First Sunday of the month, except for the month of June, because Kristen and Joe are getting married the day before. And so they're slacking.
Priorities.
Well, we're going to be going on our honeymoon.
I think we could go down and open up the place. What's the worst that could happen?
It could close permanently.
Violating liquor license. And
yeah. And lastly, we need to also thank and mention the Top Leaf Cigar Lounge.
Okay, I was going to make sure we didn't leave.
Yeah, the Premium Cigar Lounge in the Triad, and always good friends of ours.
Yeah, they've got, I'm going to be reviewing one of the cigars they fought to get in.
Oh, is that where you got that
one? Black Label?
The Bishop's Blend.
Bishop's Blend.
That was good. That was a good one.
It underscores that the best cigar accessory you can get is a tobacconist you trust. And JD and Bethany, both excellent palates, mm-hmm. And diverse. Both of them have different likes in there. And it's, you know, granted, it's an intimate place. You've got plenty of seats, and you meet all kinds of characters. Heck, we might even be there. Cigar Mom's there on Saturdays for some reason. They trust her with that much product. I'm surprised.
I don't know if I would do that. I warned them.
It'd be cheaper to pair.
Well, they said, this is so cool. We're pairing cigars. We don't have to pay our cash. We'll save so much money. I said, you haven't been around her very long, have you?
No, because she's a, whatever the cigar equivalent of a Lush is.
A tobaccoholic.
Can we use cigar, that?
Cigaraholic.
Yeah, you've lost your crucifucking mind.
You've been waiting to work that one in.
Sacred and profane in one breath.
Yeah. What are you smoking?
Okay,
Speaking of the cigar that you want to review.
Right. What I'm smoking right now is, I think it's Dominican. It's the Bolivar, which has been sitting back in my humidor at least since the middle of last year. And it's still perfect, white ash, great. You know what? It's just a great cigar. But what I'm going to review is a great cigar I had yesterday. So I roll into Top Leaf there on 1st Street in Winston-Salem. And, do like I always do. I got friends with me. Chaplain Honey Bear, Chaplain Billy.
Willie, I like Willie.
Okay, he was there. Man, smoke his first, cigar, proper cigar. He had two or three relights, but he was down to the I need a roach clip before he did the second and third. He did the Bombay.
Impressive.
Yeah, it was. I gave him. But I'm going to be reviewing the Black Label Cigars Bishop's Blend, which other than the only thing wrong with it was on the band. Bishops did not have an apostrophe.
A grammatically incorrect cigar.
Well, you're not smoking the band. So the wrapper was Ecuadorian Maduro, the binder Ecuadorian Habano, and the filler. Now the filler is what got me. It's Nicaraguan. Nothing real surprising there. But this, I've never seen this as a filler. Pennsylvania broadleaf and Connecticut broadleaf. I've heard with Kinetic.
Seen them as rappers.
Rappers, yeah.
Yeah.
So already, that's got me interested. And then JD happened to, I saw it on your Instagram site. And do you have anything special in? He said, I think we had the Black Label Bishop's Blend, but I don't think. And he pauses, which is like, and he goes rifling through one of those private humidors. And he pulls one out, and of course, I bought it, and it didn't have a lot of change up on it, but the change up was good.
Yeah, and what doesn't change is good.
Is good, yeah. So you're going to get the black pepper and punch to that, as I think most black labels I've had, sort of major
you're right
on
up
that.
Front. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Lito Gomez, LFD punch, but it's there. And the black pepper is accentuated by earthy notes, minerally notes, or at least that kind of soil, fecund. And fecund.
Yeah, because otherwise it sounds like fecal.
Yeah, it didn't taste fecal.
No.
Not that I can compare that.
Is rich and blooming with life and richness.
Okay, it just tastes like Yeah. It was earthy. We'll just leave it at that. And then there were citrus notes that were surprising. And those were the bits where I pulled the cigar back and go, am I still smoking the same stick I lit? Closed foot. Mm-hmm. So you get that, you know, that you get that good pepper off that that wrapper right up front. And it's not a Lancero, but a little bit round, a little more girth than a Lancero. And I'm having trouble now with what the ring gauge was, but
probably a Toro.
But it was good. And I know they're out of them, and they actually weren't even supposed to have those. It was another the distributor had several boxes left behind from a person that ended up not wanting their shipment, and Bethany, which, being the wise one,
can't understand why you would not want a shipment of those.
Bethany, as wise as she is, she jumped right on that, and so we'll be looking for those again when they come in.
Absolutely.
So, Charles, what are you smoking?
I'm smoking Time Flies by Foundry, and been enjoying some things from Foundry in the past, and I saw these, so I grabbed them. Foundry's interesting. A couple of years ago, General Cigars decided to branch out into more boutique types of cigars, and so they've started a whole division that is supports boutique cigar makers and blenders, and Foundry is one of those lines that they've been doing. And they've been doing this in conjunction with AJ Fernandez. He's been blending some things for them. They've been using his factories.
I was about to curse you, but I forgot you gave me one of these.
Yeah. And this one isn't an AJ cigar, but I'm just giving the general background. But it is produced in his factory and uses his tobacco. He's sort of like a mentor and godfather to all these nice boutique blends that General is trying to incubate, and Foundry is one of them. And this is their Time Flies cigar. I got the Churchill, which is a
girthy.
It's actually more of like a maybe a 54, 56 than the usual 52 you'd get in a Churchill. But the wrapper is Habano 2000, and then Nicaraguan binder and filler. It doesn't give you anything that you're not expecting from a Nicaraguan cigar. So you have a leathery earthiness to it. You get a little bit of pepper up front, but that goes pretty quickly. And you do get some citrus notes. But what flavor then becomes the most prominent through it is dark roast coffee.
Oh, good grief.
And so it's like drinking a nice cup of really good dark roast coffee. It has that coffee smell in the room note. Somebody came into Summer Gale Studios, they would think that I was brewing coffee from the aroma of this cigar. And so it's just a very relaxing. The citrus comes in and out here and there, and the other flavors hang around, but it really is like drinking a good cup of coffee.
What's the price point? It's a big cigar.
It's a big cigar. They're pretty reasonable. They're in the $8 range, and some of the online will run specials on. They also, what's interesting, they have an interesting band.
It's like a sugar skull.
It's a sugar skull, and it comes in four vitolas, and each box is the sugar skull, but it's a different color. They have four different colors for the different
vitolas. I wonder who would like that.
Yes, I already told her.
Cigars and likes skulls.
Yeah. So when you take
off... The Bishop's Blend had skull on it.
Yeah. So when you take off the band on the wings, where normally it has, hecho a mano, or,
That wasn't tobacco you just smoked.
Produco de Nicaragua, they have these phrases: impress yourself, raise some eyebrows, challenge the world, exceed expectations,
in bed,
just go, seize the day, expect the unexpected, leave a mark, start something, call your mother, finish something.
It's a Jewish cigar.
Yeah. Help a friend, make a statement, set a goal. So each of the bands has motivational speaking on it, which is really just
now,
an Foundry's, interesting point.
Foundry's the same one that does like the Wise Man, not the Wise Man, the Tabernacle, isn't it?
No, that's Foundation.
Foundation. Okay.
Yeah, Foundry does the moose ones, the chillin' moose, rabid moose. They also recently redid the Ramona Yones classic.
Okay, now I want to try that.
Yeah,
I think I have tried the Ramona Yones remake.
Well, there's a Ramona Yones remake, but there's also Foundry does a remake of the Ramona Yones classic, and it's different than what General's rebringing back of the Ramona Yones.
All beautifully accentuated with Virgil Cane. Ginger infused bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's an addictive substance. Both of them, I mean, the cigars and the whiskey.
It's kind of like our podcast. It's an addictive.
No, our podcast is not addictive.
Oh yeah, we're more like an earworm, I guess.
Yeah, it would be an infestation. You'd compare it to Virgil Cane rye whiskey. Started with one goal: to create the best damn whiskey around, drawing on their culinary know-how. And driven by flavor, founders David and Ryan, both accomplished chefs, were inspired to boldly blend, infuse, and tinker with choice ingredients to craft category-shattering whiskeys, proving that it's not about stuffy tradition, but about taking what you know and taking chances. Each of their spirits is a tribute to their dedication to making whiskey their way, a whiskey they'd want to drink. Again, Virgil Cane Rye Whiskey, a damn fine whiskey.
Yeah.
So a lot. So we've not podcasted in a while because I'm still in the process of processing to finding work and then also getting the new house sorted out. I'm packing everything up. So and then your truck broke down, which. God, sound like a great country western song to be written.
Mm-hmm.
Were you also drunk that day and your mother getting out of prison?
Yeah, my dog left me and I shot my wife.
No, she would have shot back. Hell with that.
Well, it's a great country song.
Right.
So you were going somewhere with all this.
I don't know where the fuck I was going. Yeah,
he's a beer and two bourbons in already.
I haven't had the beer yet. So we were... We hadn't podcast in a while, and I had an epiphany, which, you know, occasionally that happens to me, and I was looking over a bit of scripture that often gets interpreted as mental illness, and it appears in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Mark being the oldest, mm-hmm. and I kind of worked off Mark because of that.
It's the oldest, yeah.
The story of the Gerasene demoniac, and story, I'm just trying to use that as a broad term right now. Because a lot of people will say, well, that's Jesus healing a mental illness, you know, to get the demons, the legion, mm-hmm. out of the Gerasene. And, you know, and I could identify with that feeling of being out of control and being outcast and having to live amongst the tombs, at least metaphorically, with my own mm-hmm. depression. And definitely can remember moments where I had to be restrained and whatnot. I mean, that's real.
Yeah.
But we've also talked on this show a number of times how over-spiritualizing something, it could be very detrimental. Mm-hmm. And I think when we're going to kind of exegete this passage, and for the Baptist kids, that's mean we're going to study it. I don't think that it is a healing story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we properly understand who Legion is, it's the same as properly identifying mental illness as a mental illness. That there is power in knowing the name of what you're dealing with. So, and that's kind of my lead in. So,
right.
So the story, for those that don't know, is this: there's this man that the nearby towns couldn't handle him anymore. He's out of control. He's thrashing about. He's hurting himself, and he's clearly been doing this for a while. He's bruised and cut up, and he's living in tattered clothes and the whole nine yards. And Jesus shows up, and the man runs up to him and says, you know, what do you have to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? You know, the demon speaking. And then the demon is named as Legion. And they say, please don't send us out. And Jesus, you know, for some reason, at least on the surface, lets them inhabit a bunch of pigs, and the pigs run off the cliff, and they all drowned. And, you know, and then the villagers are, in different versions of it, shocked, surprised, asking to leave. I imagine if you own the pigs, you're probably pretty pissed. So, and it gets interpreted as a healing story. And so my conjecture is that it's not. because in its context, and you've got your Bible open, so you can you can check me on that. I've just got my notes.
And I've checked it also.
Is that it appears after a series of parables. Mm-hmm. And my argument is, and I'm not the first one to make this argument, but is that it is a parable.
Also very important, not only does it appear among a series of parables, but it also appears, or what appears not just before it, but very, very close to it, is Jesus explaining the use of parables.
Right.
So not only do you have parables, but, oh, and by the way, this is why I'm telling you parables.
Right, so you understand what the hell's going on.
Right. So, you know, I think that adds to what you're talking about.
And so you've always pointed out within that there are no accidents in literature.
Correct. Nothing happens in the text by accident.
And so my thought is, when it's the healing stories with Jesus and casting out unclean spirits, it's not the first time the Spirit talks back. Usually Jesus saying, especially in Mark's gospel, don't tell anybody who I am. You know, my time has not come yet. However you want to understand the Mark and mystery of why Jesus doesn't want anybody to know who and what he is. But the unclean spirits are named and they might speak or cause somebody to do something. But this is out of the ordinary because it names itself Legion. Mm-hmm. And when you read that as from a parable standpoint, is you're in occupied Palestine under Roman rule, and Romans tend to roam around in things called legions. And then, you know, I think the real kicker is when you're reading the text is, what the hell do the pigs have to do with anything? Mm. And I'm thinking, well, if your audience is largely Jewish, what worse could happen to you than your spirit to inhabit a pig? I don't think you have to be
or
Jewish.
Your enemy.
I think even Romans would, you know, it would be an insult to be put in pigs.
Mm.
You know, pigs generally have that vile kind of filthy association. Yeah. And see, I think that in where it comes out for me as somebody that's dealt with mental illness is when we mislabel something, it's the same as misdiagnosing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates all kinds of problems. Because if you're trying to heal somebody from a physical and mental illness and you interpret it only as spiritual, you might help them in some degree, but more often than not, you're going to hurt them. And so that's my spiel. That's the my exegesis on it. I'm going to shut up for a bit.
The other thing with the, because I'm reading, I had a note in here, because I even write marginalia in my Bible, which is why I know that I'm not going to hell. That's what people are supposed to do, is write marginalia. But when Legion says, send us into the swine, let us enter into them, the symbol of the particular legions that were occupying Palestine at the time was a wild boar.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah, that was their crest. So that's another connection you make there. Yeah, not a lot of people get that connection.
I just did a few word studies. You get all kinds. Well, you've had 2 or 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Since my epiphany and text messages.
I've also studied this with the great Sam Moss, who is brilliant.
I'm trying to remember. I know he's been to the bar mitzvahs,
the interfaith seders. Yeah. So, but other things I think that support your premise with this is, again, it's very different than the other healing stories, because there is a healing story immediately after this.
Right.
And
What a transition.
Yeah. Because in the Gerasene demoniac, Jesus doesn't actually heal. Okay, there is no active participation on his part. The legion says, begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. But then later in verse 12...
I never even paused over the word country.
Yeah.
The area or goes in.
And the unclean spirits begged him, send us into the swine, let us enter them. So he gave them permission. Yeah. So it's not healing.
It's not a
casting
out.
He did not cast them out because they were intent on staying inside this and possessing this person. They wanted out. They just didn't want to leave the whole country, but they did want out of this person. And Jesus says, okay, go ahead. go into those swine. You compare that to where he restores life and then has the daughter who's been dead and or is crippled, and in the next verses where they actually touch his cloak, he puts his hand out and touches the girl. He says, "Let her get up." You know, there's a command.
Which is nothing like what's going on in that passage.
Nothing like what happens in the previous episode.
And we know from Mark, Matthew and Luke are using Mark. I think Luke adds a second demoniac, or
I think Matthew does, and Luke actually gives a number for Legion and things like that. But the basic story is the same.
The Matthew's got the second demoniac.
Yeah, second demoniac, yeah. But
you should stop smoking, man. I tell you, that coughs.
Yeah.
Or drink more Virgil Cane.
I'll drink more Virgil Cane. But there's, what was I going to say?
Why do people, and we've talked about this before, but why is it that when it's some kind of response like that, that's actually very reasonable, that's not a reach to make that interpretation?
Well, you're politicizing the Bible. Jesus was political and military and a militant.
That's why he got crucified.
And trying to fight off an oppressive imperial force. Goodness. You know, he's fighting for this oppressed people. That's not our Jesus. Our Jesus is strong. Oh, I've been hanging out with you too long. Our Jesus is strong, and he's made America great.
It's a little long for us to not make a Trump joke. But, yeah, why do people want to have this sort of supernatural interpretation of something? Why does it have to be the demon in this sort of almost like Halloween kind of, I don't even have words for it. It's almost cartoonish.
It's interesting. I'm having a discussion with a friend and my son about this just actually earlier today. Not about this passage, but about mental illness. And I mentioned your observation that the brain is the only organ that knows it's an organ.
Right.
And so for some reason we treat illness of it differently. And so what my friend Ed was pointing out was that we get this all caught up with the whole free will thing, that because it's your brain and because your brain is aware it's your brain, that somehow your behavior is your fault because you have chosen this. And that we don't want to treat it just purely as an illness, because no one chooses to get cancer. But if your brain is aware of the fact that it's a brain and it's active and that it's doing all this shit to you and making you feel certain ways and hear certain things and see things and act in certain ways, well, then that's your fault, because that's where your free will comes in.
Right.
And this metaphor of mental illness with possession, that it is something outside of nature. All other diseases are natural. There is no explanation for any of the other diseases these people have that Jesus heals. Right? We're not told why they're crippled or why they're blind.
No.
Right? But we need to know that the demoniac is possessed. Possession is, quote, supernatural and not part of the natural world.
We kind of distance ourselves from
that. And keep the responsibility for it on the person with the disease. We can blame them. Yeah, that absolves us from having to do anything.
Right, and it's that, and I'll butcher it, St. Augustine, that without God, I can do nothing. Without me, God will do nothing, in the sense of recovery from mental illness, and we can add substance use in there and a few other things, is that there's a spiritual dimension to it, but it doesn't excuse you from responsibility. I mean, just saying that, oh, well, I've got a demon. And I was like, well, you don't. And I've had to say that more than once to a number of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, honestly, I've yet to meet the person that makes them more upset. That for some reason, when you demythologize it, I don't know, that's liberating for people. You mean Satan's not?
I think so.
You mean Satan's not trying to take over me? It's like, no. You're not that fucking important. Yeah. That's one of the things I had to drill into my own head, is that I'm neither strategic or there's no point, mm-hmm. you know.
And we see that again in this parable, and let's start calling it a parable.
Let's call it a parable.
That'd
be a great title for this podcast.
Yeah, that the you know, it's not the demoniac who is speaking to Jesus, this, you know, begging him to heal and cast out the demons that possess him, and you know, when it happens, he's just like, oh wow, I'm free, thank you. Again, it's a very different thing, and you know, the interaction with the demons. But another way that we can keep this in the military and political, when the people came to see what had happened, they came to Jesus and saw the demonic sitting there clothed and in his right mind, the very man who'd been. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine reported it. Then they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. Again, we don't get that with the other healings where people are like, oh my gosh, you got to get out of here. We can't handle this.
But that's going to be more threatening to an oppressed people.
To an oppressed people who've just seen somebody do something to the local legion. And what also, Bible pop quiz for you.
Oh, sword drill.
Chris.
I don't know. Okay. Not Baptist.
What does Jesus say when people wanted to clear the miracles in his healings?
Tell them to shut up and mark. Don't say anything about.
Right. Don't tell anybody I did this.
What? Messianic secret. That's what it is. The marking. Right.
Well, first of all, Jesus refuses to leave.
Yeah. That was going to be my next answer.
Okay. And then he says, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you.
Which would make sense.
So I mean, now he's, instead of, hey, let's keep this between us. Don't tell anybody. But with this one, it's, hey, go spread the word. Go tell everybody what just happened here.
Which is what the parables were meant to do.
Exactly. Wow.
And it's so weird, though, because I think for the audience, the early audiences of this, mm-hmm. The notion of Christ, the Messiah, casting out a foreign oppressor makes a lot of sense, because that would be a Davidic type act.
Because that is our image of the Davidic Messiah,
yeah.
Is he is a real political military leader, an actual person who's coming to restore Israel as a people, not in terms of their soul, but to cast off an oppressor and reestablish the kingdom.
Right. We need that guy to show up or gal soon before the orange beast that sits on seven hills fucks us all back to the Stone Age.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know Pennsylvania Avenue was that high. That it was seven hills. I know it's slightly elevated within the marsh that is Washington. But
I see what you did there. We're horrible people.
Yes, we are. But that's why you love us and why you're listening. Because we say all the horrible stuff you wish you could.
Well,
that you're too nice
too.
To. Only when they're guests of ours.
So how do we help? And this is a fair question, and it's probably going to be more toward a Christian ear. But how do we help if we're people of faith and we know the dangers of over-spiritualizing? Are there some best practices, and I'm asking this question knowing some of my own answers, that could help people who love and care for folks with mental illnesses to properly understand how that the disease works, what it is and what it is not?
I think overall, and the first step is, and these are things that we've been repeating for a long time.
Well, it's May's Mental Health Month.
But the first is not to, as you have pointed out, one of your div school professors said, don't walk everything past the cross.
Dr. Turner, God bless him.
You know, to resist the urge to the only way, well, I think it's as if the only way we can be compassionate is in a spiritual way. I can't be compassionate to you because you're a person suffering, but I can be compassionate to you because I'm a good Christian.
Well, and it seems,
and so I have to couch everything in those terms because that's what's simple for me.
Right. Well, but if the main narrative that you get from theology is that it's all about saving souls, salvation, mm-hmm. It kind of becomes the problem with a problem if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Exactly.
and which is just another way of saying you walked it past the cross when it didn't need to go past it. I think for me is that dealing with, especially with family, extended family, is go ahead and giving them the, whereas once I would just boldly charge in and God has nothing to do with this, this is purely an illness, that just closes up ears really quickly. And it's not entirely accurate, because illness of any kind, no matter where it is in the body, because the body, mind, and spirit are all one, it's going to impact it. Mm-hmm. And there are things that I can recognize now that I do spiritually, they're good for my health. Mm-hmm. But part of it was losing this sort of superstitious, the devil's at work, and you know every thought that runs through my mind is that's from Satan's mouth to my anxiety. So I find that if I give them that one little inroad, but then say, here's the physical stuff that goes on when you're depressed. Here's how it impacts your body. Things that I don't have control over. You know, you could spend, you know, you don't want to listen to the head. Ask somebody that's depressed and suffering from anxiety what their heart's like. The physical one, not the metaphoric, right. Emotional. Although you can ask about that too. Mm-hmm. Depression gets under the skin. You know, it's not just in your head. And even if it was, where the hell else was a mental illness going to be?
Right. Whereas Dumbledore responding to Harry Potter saying, is this all real or just in my head? Well, of course it's in your head, but why does that mean it's not real? I agree is that we need to move beyond that initial way of approaching someone with mental illness and the spiritual and also make the distinction between the spiritual and the religious.
We did that a couple podcasts ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that may be your entree. That may be your opening salvo, but it can't be your only strategy for trying to be helpful. It may be how you recognize their suffering and at least for you acknowledge it, but then it has to then move to a more medical understanding. And again, these are all things we've talked about is then, you become Job's friends before they open their mouths and say, so let me sit and be with you in this.
Well, and I do wellness planning with patients, and I do a real simple diagram of mind, body, and spirit. And we list things that we can do, or they recognize they can do to benefit any one of those three. So I do separate them out a little bit. And yeah, you're hard pressed to draw lines between them, but the goal is that all of them combined, it makes for a whole person, a whole and healthier person. Is this a unique Christian problem, though? Do Jews do the same shit with the? I mean, obviously not with the Gerasene demoniac, but
right,
it's like Saul's. Well, raving we madness.
Do. Well, I was going to say with Saul's madness, it is
it's not referred cryptic, to he actually
it is being tormented by God. But David doesn't just sit and go, "Well, you know, this is your fault," or anything. He does do something active, which is the playing of music. He knows that it's something that soothes him. And it's an activity that helps us all. I think because we understand the mind-body connection a little bit more intuitively in Judaism. And again, this is not a knock on Christianity.
But,
but you know, Christianity does, and depends on the denomination, how far this goes, does make a very distinct difference and division between the body and the spirit in that one is privileged over the other. Where that does not exist in Judaism. The soul or spirit and the body are, while they are separate entities, they are inextricably intertwined and mutually dependent upon each other. And so this recognition of one affecting the other is sort of there, which is why in the Mishaberach for healing, a prayer that we say for members of the community we want for healing, first of all, we don't ask God to cure. We ask God to heal.
Explain that. We've done that in other podcasts, but
right. And there's a difference. There's a prayer that's said at various times, usually on Shabbat, where you pray for members of your community who are sick or ill, and what it does it is a prayer for healing, and we ask for God to heal them in both body and spirit. Not one or the other, but both. And even if it were doing this specifically for someone that's, you know, who has a broken leg, we don't say, and then heal their leg. We say, may God heal them in both body and spirit. So even recognizing that having your broken leg can, you know, mess with you spiritually.
Right. Yeah. Anybody that's been, you know, handicapped by an injury can speak to mood right. being altered.
Altered, yeah.
Well, so, and the other thing that...
So I don't think it's as much. And also, it's we don't go straight to Torah the way that you guys go to Bible to explain stuff. You know, and you know, let's find that verse that'll explain this, and this is what I'll say to you.
Versus Occam's razor type.
Yeah. But a lot of that has to do because we have Pirkei Avot, we have Talmud, we have, you know, a couple thousand years of commentary, and some of the people making commentary were also physicians like Rambam. I knew I was getting Rambam in there. We can do that.
So a couple of things I was thinking about were Christianity, and I'm going to assume westernized Christianity that makes
very
this
important point
firm. There is mind, there is spirit, there is body. They don't have anything to do with each other. It strikes me as the earliest movements for mental health and mental health care were found in Muslim countries long before Christians ever.
I think one of the, I think the first.
It is. No, it is. The first one was Muslim.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if that's because they started out, and within that could be Eastern Christianity and Judaism. Mm-hmm. They started from the right principle to begin with, realizing this isn't satanic or anything. It's not Satan. It's serotonin. It's not demons. It's dopamine. I'd never really put that together, and I assume that must also be.
I'm sure it is. I'm not as well versed to speak to that, but that is certainly, I think, something that you can make a strong case for. But now I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Let me prepare for it.
Yeah, prepare to get another swig there. So,
it's so good.
We both spent some time talking about not spiritualizing how we interact with somebody with mental illness. So what do you do with the fact that both of us have used our friendship and particularly this blog and podcast to help us and each other deal with mental illness?
So what's the question in that?
Didn't we just create a whole hypocritical situation where the way that you and I have helped each other deal with mental illness is to sit and talk about religion and spirituality?
Yeah, but
and we just said that you shouldn't just do that?
No, we said you shouldn't separate them out into distinct entities. I mean,
we don't have a medical blog.
Right. So from my perspective, we understand God and Father, Son, Holy Spirit as community. God is community. And makes sense. Humans are innately social creatures, created, endowed by God. The image of God is community. So why should it be surprising that we find support in other children of God? I mean, NA and AA, I mean, great examples.
Yeah, but what is the subject of our blog and podcast?
Bullshit, most of the time.
But cigars. But religious bullshit.
Right. Well, but because, you know,
And we both have mentioned in a number of formats that it's one of the things that has helped us with mental illness. So
my work,
did we just negate our whole argument?
No, because, and you're just baiting me because
yes,
you
am.
Already feel the same way. We recover. There are those that argue within spiritual care and psych that one, spirituality goes, then their mind goes, and then finally the body suffers. And you can make arguments as to if that's fair or not. I do know that the recovery goes in the opposite direction, or at least has for me, body, then my mind, and then increasingly my spirituality. It's different, all three. But I know those early days it was less about talking about religion as, oh my God, I got to go to Greensboro. Charles is going to be sitting in that coffee house, and I'm going to be pissed at myself that he had to wait on me. The knock-on effect was I got out of bed that day. I took a shower. I cleaned myself. I brushed my teeth. I put on clothes. I left the house.
But didn't I use religion to get you to that point?
Oh, now it is semantics on that one. And it's also limiting religion to only being, I guess, some act of worship, but you know, something really highly formal, when religion, in at least my own faith, is not just a set of precepts and, you know, dotting the correct I and crossing the correct T, and did you genuflect, you know, and did you get baptism to infants, you know. It's religion is more than that. It is community. And I think that's the response that I would give to people either living with mental illness or those that love them, is the necessity for letting them be around other folks that maybe are in a better sense of, they're further along in their recovery. They're getting well, or they're coping.
Or someone who's not going to go, and so we're going to pray over you now.
Right. You can say that. I personally don't let that be it.
But yeah, no. Well, you've never said it to me, and I'm fairly confident I've never said it to you.
Well, if you did, it's usually smart-ass, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got evidence of that, but...
What, me being a smart-ass?
Well, yeah.
Oh, okay. Couldn't imagine that happening.
It's like a Bigfoot sighting. It's so rare.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, any words of wisdom?
And again, there's nothing related.
No,
it's just happened to pull up.
Random
here. So, Flaubert famously wrote, "Here is true immorality, ignorance, and stupidity. The devil is nothing but this. His name is Legion."
Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah.
Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/Ethan Sapphire. Shoulda woulda coulda, but I didn't, that's for real. You can't get back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live with that. If you learn from your mistakes, you'll get another chance at that.